Well, Deb wasn't kidding about the double bill. We're actually going to give you a double bill today. Father Bill was gracious enough to ask me if I wanted to share preaching responsibilities this weekend. And what we decided to do was I would come up and I'd talk about the fall in the garden from Genesis, and then he would come and he would talk about the gospel, the temptation in the desert, and how they link together. Because remember, so many times that Hebrew scripture, the Old Testament, supports, in a Christian view, what happened in the gospel. So Father Bill's role will be kind of like that guy in the parade with the shovel at the end who tries to clean up the mess. So, good luck with that, Father. So, a few minutes with you, my goal is to get you to consider looking beyond the simplistic, narrow view of the creation story, and especially about the fall in the garden. Beyond how it's a story about how the first man and first woman screwed up and ruined it for the rest of us for all of eternity. That narrow view of original sin and how it impacts our lives gives us no guidance for what to do with it. What we want to take away from any scripture is, what does that mean to me today? What does that mean to me for living in God's creation today? And so let's see what else we might be able to take from this story. Let's see what we remember. On the first day, God separated light from dark, created day and night, and then God sat back, looked at what God had created, and he declared it tov, which is the Hebrew word for good. So God declared it tov, and he did the same thing after days 2, 3, 4, and 5. He looked at what God had created, and he said, it is tov, it is good. But on the sixth day, the final day of creation, when God created all the creatures of the land and the sea and created two creatures in God's own image, then God sat back and looked at all he created and declared it tov meod. That extra word makes all the difference. The extra word, meod, means abundant or overflowing goodness. God had created a true paradise, a place of abundance, a place of goodness, a place of peace. God had created God's kingdom here on earth. God had created tov meod. God had created true shalom. God's relationship with humanity was abundantly good. Humanity's relationship with others was abundantly good. Humanity's relationship with the world that God had created around them was abundantly good. All was shalom. But we look around today and we can't say that, can we? Those relationships are not abundantly good. And that's really one of the main takeaways. And the reason the relationships today are not abundantly good is not because one man and one woman at the beginning of time ate a piece of forbidden fruit. It's because humanity tends to drift into that selfishness of pretending that we know better at times and ignoring our relationship and our dependency upon God. And so you can think of Adam and Eve as a kind of a parable. Jesus uses parables all the time so that we'll hear the story and we'll think, oh, I kind of recognize myself in that story. And so think of Adam and Eve as a parable. A parable of how we at times think that we know better and kind of ignore our relationship with God. So if we want to take something away from this Adam and Eve creation story, what we need to do is kind of forget about Adam and Eve. We need to think about turning to God and asking ourselves, how can we work on our relationship with God? We need to think about turning towards each other and think about how we can work upon our relationships with each other. We need to think about looking around us at God's creation and think about how we can work on our relationship with creation. That's how we build God's kingdom. That's how we build tov meod. That's how we restore shalom to God's creation. And now my tag team partner.
Abundantly good. The shalom. It's hanging in there in front of us. What do you understand by shalom? We probably would say peace, right? But we got to look at it deeper. For you and I, peace could simply mean I'm not going to disturb your well-being. I'm not going to attack you. I'm not going to interfere with you. I'm not going to trouble you, right? That could be considered peace. I'm just going to let you be. I'm not going to involve myself in any way that would harm you. But that is passive. The word shalom is also very active. It, in the Jewish sense, means not only will I not disturb you, I will actually help you become better. That's the element that we often forget. Yeah, I won't cause war, but I'm actually going to work for you to be a better person. I'm going to let you become more who your true self. That's shalom. And our liturgy committee said that one of the ways we're going to look at Lent as a parish for the next weeks is we are journeying into shalom. And I would say that that's very significant, because if we look then at what Bill said, the two people can't be blamed for all of our mistakes and all of our problems. No, we are part of it because we're human. And that selfish aspect is something that we have to take into consideration. That will work against shalom. And how do we understand that? Well, all we need to do is read the gospel, and it says it clearly. Because Jesus, as he became aware that he was the beloved, and realized that he wanted to go forth and build this community built on Abba's love, he realized that I've got some problems that might appear in me. I've got propensities that will interfere with me building that peaceable kingdom that we will build around Abba's love. He's sitting there and saying, hey, yes, I am called to this good goal, this good work, but I realize that within me there are these tendencies that will just prevent me from accomplishing it. And what are those tendencies? What are those tendencies that we might reflect upon and seeing how they might affect you and I in our journey to shalom? First of all, I'm only going to take care of my needs. I'm concerned about my benefits. I want to make sure that I have all the creature comforts I need that will take care of me. I want to make sure I have the best food. I want to make sure that I have security. I want to think all those things that would draw our attention just to the self and the security of self, not at all taking in you or me. It's just the self. That first one. The second one is even more fun. How many of us already know that we won't do things because others will not appreciate them? We're afraid of status. We are constantly wondering what other people think and other people feel, so that we guard what we truly want to do by, do we play to the applause of others? Because that's the second temptation. You are going to be the guy with the greatest status. You are going to be the best. You are going to, and of course, if you and I are struggling to be the best, then guess what the rest of you are? That works against shalom. That works against the community. That's it. And of course, the third, power over control. Oh, it has to be my way because I know it all. I'm the greatest. I want power over you so that we get what I want. That's basically the other and third temptation Jesus says that's active in him. In other words, it's not Adam and Eve. It's not just you and I. It's even Jesus taking into consideration these tendencies that we have that will prevent us from being that cologne, that community based on shalom. Not that we respect each other, but we also help each other grow. What a community in Abba's love. There's only one element that Jesus does not address that's very active in our community. Money.